serving Kalamazoo for over 20 years.
Time now for Western Michigan at Work. Each Tuesday evening, the Fetzer Broadcasting Company brings you the story of one of the industries of Western Michigan so that you may know more about Western Michigan at Work. Tonight, we are to visit the People's Rapid Transit Lines, which provides inner-city bus transportation for a number of towns and cities in Western Michigan. Here is your guide, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Good evening. The story of the People's Rapid Transit Company of Kalamazoo is one chapter in the fascinating history of transportation in Western Michigan. The first chapter in that history would tell of the Indian canoes which were used by the first white men to reach this region. It would continue with a second chapter on the first crude trails, first followed by the natives and then widened and improved by the white man. Among these would be the old Chicago Road, now US 112, running from Detroit to what is now Chicago, and the old Territorial Road, which followed an Indian trail from Detroit to St. Joseph and passed through Kalamazoo. Then would come another chapter or two on lake transportation, the old sailing vessels and the coming of the steamboat. Western Michigan was long dependent on this kind of transport, especially for carrying its heavy freight shipments to the east. Next would be the story of the railroads, opening, so far as Kalamazoo is concerned, with the arrival of the Michigan Central in 1846. That was an event of great importance to all of Western Michigan, too. It was quickly followed by the consolidation and construction of plank roads, north to Grand Rapids and south to Three Rivers. These served as feeders to the railroad. But it wasn't long before the railroads began to build their own feeder lines, and the rails reached in due course almost to every town and village of any consequence in Western Michigan. At the turn of the century, if you wanted to travel any distance, or ship goods any distance, there was only one way to do it, by steam railroad. Then almost overnight came the electric interurban. Starting with a little doodlebug outfit between Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti, the electric interurban spread all over the state during the early years of the 20th century. The Michigan Central was paralleled from Kalamazoo to Detroit by the interurban. So was the Pennsylvania Railroad from Kalamazoo to Grand Rapids. And lines reached out from Benton Harbor to Water Vliet, to Dowagiac, and to Niles and South Bend. The interurbans went many places that the steam railroads didn't. They provided more frequent service. They stopped at every four corners. Fares were cheaper. And they took you right to the center of the cities instead of depositing you at a station on the outskirts. It might have seemed to the people of Western Michigan in 1915 that their transportation needs were pretty well taken care of. You could go almost any place you wanted to by steam or electric railroad. And for trips around town, there was that popular new gadget called the automobile. Of course, no one dreamed that one day automotive transport would vie with the rails. And at about the same time, people occasionally saw an airplane at a county fair or at some other large gathering. But no one thought then that air transport would ever become a major factor in our transportation system. In the year 1912, an electric interurban line was built between Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids. This was one of the finest lines built in the state. Instead of following the highways, as many interurban lines did, it had its own right-of-way. It was crossed at Monteith Junction, near Shelbyville, by a line between Battle Creek and Allegan, which followed the line of an old steam railroad. These two lines provided electric interurban service for both Plainwell and Allegan. But in between those two cities is Otsego. And Otsego was sort of bypassed by the interurban. All it had was the old Lakeshore Line Railroad, which ran an occasional passenger train in those days between Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo through Otsego. Well, this gave Otto Lewis of Otsego an idea. It was only a matter of 2 or 3 miles from Otsego to Plainwell. Why not carry passengers to the interurban by automobile? So he rigged up a big touring car and started making regular runs from Otsego to Plainwell to meet the interurban cars. That worked out pretty well, and he got a sizable number of passengers. Then came the day, a few years later, when he decided he might as well take his passengers all the way to Kalamazoo, another 15 miles or so. Probably that decision was coincident with the improvement of highways. At any rate, Mr. Lewis now became a competitor of the interurban rather than a feeder. It was around 1924 that the interurbans began to feel the competition from the buses. Pardon me. By 1925, a total of 108 bus lines were operating in Michigan, with 541 buses in daily service and carrying more than 16 million passengers that year. The interurbans tried desperately to combat the competition of the buses, but the electric interurbans were doomed. They disappeared from the scene even more rapidly than they appeared. On June 1, 1929, the Kalamazoo Gazette told that all forms of interurban service out of Kalamazoo had ceased at midnight. The motor bus was an even more flexible type of transportation than the electric interurban. It picked up passengers anywhere and let them off anywhere. It wasn't tied down by the rails. It went wherever there was a demand for transportation. Otto Lewis now operated as the Lewis Rapid Transit Company. This company purchased bus lines which had already been established between Kalamazoo and South Haven and between Kalamazoo and Three Rivers. The line from Kalamazoo to Otsego was extended to Allegan and later to Holland. These bus lines may be said to have spelled the doom of railroad passenger service on three lines. The old Lakeshore line, now the New York Central, which ran from Three Rivers through Schoolcraft, Kalamazoo, Plainwell, Otsego, and Allegan to Grand Rapids, was the one that was hardest hit. After a final effort to maintain service in a one-car gasoline rail coach, all passenger service was abandoned on that line 11 years ago. The Michigan Central line from Kalamazoo to South Haven also abandoned passenger service, as did the Pier Marquette from Allegan to Holland. The enterprise started by Mr. Lewis had a checkered history. He sold it about 1927 to the People's Transport Company of Muskegon, which operated the city lines there. Then about 1930, it was sold to a new corporation, the People's Rapid Transit Company. Harry J. Bemis is the president of that company, and Alan Gonneville is the secretary. The line to Three Rivers was extended south to Elkhart and South Bend, but last year this line was sold to the Indiana Motor Bus Company, leaving the People's Rapid Transit Company operating wholly within the state of Michigan and greatly simplifying the problem of bookkeeping. At one time, a line was operated between Kalamazoo, Hastings, and Lansing, but this was sold to the Indian Trails Bus Line. Another new line, still operated by the company, is the one to Long Lake and Vicksburg. At one time in its history, People Rapid Transit Company also went into the business of manufacturing buses. A small bus called the Pony Cruiser was made. This was about 1938. Some 2 years later, this part of the business was sold to the Kalamazoo Coach Company and is today a completely separate enterprise. The People's Rapid Transit Company today, therefore, is one of the smaller bus companies operating in the state. It has 9 buses operating out of Kalamazoo to Holland, to South Haven, and to Vicksburg. It employs 10 operators and a total of 19 people. It has its own office and garage building here in Kalamazoo on Cooley Street. It's a new structure just completed. Mr. Judson A. Holderman, who is general manager of the company's operations, has been in the bus business for a great many years. He's sitting beside me here in our studio this evening, and I'd like to ask him a few questions. First, Mr. Holderman, how about taxes?
Like everyone else, we have to pay a federal and state tax on every gallon of gasoline we use. Our license plates cost us $1.25 per hundredweight. That adds up to around $200 for our larger buses. Then we have to pay a mileage tax to the State Public Service Commission, a mil and a half for every mile we traveled. And of course, we have to pay a sales tax on what we buy, corporation taxes, and property taxes.
Lots of taxes. How about ticket offices?
Ticket agents receive commission on all tickets sold.
Well, Mr. Holderman, what were the early buses like that Mr. Lewis operated from Otsego to Plainwell and Kalamazoo?
Mr. Lewis used a real Speedwagon chassis with bodies built by Fitzjohn Body Works of Muskegon.
In what other ways has the bus business changed down through the years?
The roads have been the greatest factor in the advancement of bus transportation. They have improved from the dirt and gravel roads, which were nearly impassable at times during the thawing season, to the asphalt and cement highways of today. At present, M43 between Glendale and Bangor is the worst road we travel. It is now being improved, and we hope it will be completed by next year. The highway to Holland has been paved a section at a time, and is now a good highway. The Vicksburg Highway is a wide superhighway, but has its disadvantage at Washington Square, where a traffic bottleneck is a common sight. Due to improved highways, we are able to run more and faster schedules.
You meant Washington Square there, didn't you, Mr. Holman?
Yes.
I see. Mr. Holman, where were the early stations of your company located here in Kalamazoo?
At 144 West Water Street and at Rosenwater. We then moved 318 West Michigan into the new Greyhound Terminal.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about passenger traffic today? Has it increased since the war or fallen off, and why?
Passenger travel has decreased about 25%. Due to the absence of gasoline rationing, automobiles have increased, and servicemen and their families are doing less traveling than during the war.
And how about the rates that you charge passengers?
Our rates are at 1942 level.
Thank you, Mr. Holderman. Now let me introduce our second guest tonight. He's a bus operator, Mr. Roscoe Leach. Roscoe, how long have you been driving buses?
I've been driving 7 years.
I suppose that every job has its good points and its bad points. How about bus driving?
Oh, it's very interesting work, and that is borne out by the fact that a good many operators stay until retirement age.
What qualifications do you have to drive a bus?
Mainly physical fitness, driving ability, mechanical knowledge, and one should know and like the public.
How about bus drivers and truck drivers? Does a good truck driver make a good bus driver, and does a good bus driver make a good truck driver?
Oh, not necessarily. Each is trained for his particular job. There's a great deal more responsibility for the bus driver.
Is there quite a lot of comradeship between the two?
Oh, very much so.
They help each other on the road?
Oh, yes. We always stop for them in the event they have trouble, and they stop for us, too.
Well, Mr. Leach, as a bus driver, what would you say is your pet peeve with the passengers?
Well, I could spend an hour on that one, but I will say that people failing to signal the bus driver is the greatest headache. People assume that a bus should stop merely because they are at the roadside, which is all wrong. We waste a lot of time stopping for people, not waiting for a bus, and the driver usually keeps still, but thinks that anyone with brains or ambition enough to raise a hand, or without brains or ambition enough to raise a hand in signal, should have to walk.
I understand that you drive quite a number of chartered buses, Mr. Leach. What are some of the types of groups that you take on these chartered trips?
Well, I spend nearly all my time on chartered trips hauling groups from lodges, churches, schools, labor unions, social groups, and business organizations. Anyone can charter a bus, and on long-distance runs, the cost is only about a cent a mile per person, which is very low-cost transportation.
I presume that you've had some pretty interesting experiences on these trips.
Yes, and my most interesting was a circle tour from Kalamazoo to the National Boy Scout Camp at Cimarron, New Mexico. The boys were very cooperative and well-behaved, and I enjoyed the trip just as much as they. Right now, I am working on the preliminaries for a trip through the Black Hills of South Dakota, the Yellowstone, on to Seattle, and back a southern route.
Well, that sounds very interesting. Mr. Leach, I believe your company won quite a distinction in 1946.
We really did. We had the highest non-accident rating of any public carrier in the state, and besides that, we also won the Maintenance Efficiency Award for our class carrier in the entire United States.
Well, congratulations. That really is an honor. And thank you, Mr. Leach, and you, Mr. Holderman, for being with us tonight. And that's the story of the People's Rapid Transit Company. Next Tuesday evening, we're going to bring you a special program about the First National Bank of Kalamazoo. Now, here's your announcer.
You've been listening to the program Western Michigan at Work, tonight featuring the People's Rapid Transit Company of Kalamazoo. These series of broadcasts, heard each Tuesday evening at 6:30, are presented in the public interest by the Fetzer Broadcasting Company.